Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jason Jordan would look at this and be like, dude, show some teeth.
Hey, I'm ready. Yeah, right foot back.
Begins with a U. It ends with an A. Has a meal near shoulder.
Monday Night Raw, number one. All right.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw review. As the other Cultaholic lads are asking what happened to that wrestler, we don't need to ask what happened to that wrestler because we're looking at them straight in the eyes via the WWE Network and via the past and our Ica Pro powered DeLorean. And who be we? I be fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio Tom Campbell, alongside the bear in the big blue bar cage, the head pen of Cultaholic Do One Aiden. He doesn't need a pencil. Throw some shade at the guy who sits opposite me. He doesn't need a pencil because he gets it right every time, so he does it with a pen. That would be Justin Henry, and he is off of America.
You and Adam look great spooning together.
Oh, that picture from What Happened to That Wrestler was horrifying and delightful.
I figure you and Adam have the same relationship that Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara have.
I mean, I wish that was the case, but he does bully me more. So
trying to shoot your shot with whatever hot British starlets out there.
Basically, yeah, I think he's just extending his reach with mine, which is a disaster waiting to happen.
That same as a charmer, though.
How did you find the XFL?
I kind of watched it intermittently while I was doing work. And I'll say this, it didn't suck.
Okay.
I found it watchable. I find some of the rules interesting. One of them is the way they do kickoffs. So, you know, when the ball is – because when you're being a Brit, you might not know how American football really works. But when you kick the ball off to the other team to start off possession, they do something a little bit differently to kind of minimize injuries, and it's actually creative. And I'm thinking the NFL may adopt this in order to cut down on the old concussions, seeing as that became a big issue.
The general consensus seems to be that Vince McMahon learned a lot of lessons from the first time.
Basically, keep the wrestling out of it.
Yes, basically. And just focus on innovative football stuff.
Well, it did good the first weekend viewership-wise, but the real test coming, you know, 4 or 5 weeks in, because last year when the NFL Alternative League, the Alliance of American Football, kicked off, had a pretty good opening weekend. 4 weeks in, and nobody gave a damn anymore.
Yeah, and I seem to remember the first week of the XFL in 2000 did very well.
Oh, yeah, that was a big deal. It did a monstrous Saturday night rating, and then weeks in, it became the ultimate who cares, and then the championship games getting buried in the ratings by the Dreyer Channel.
Yeah, oh, crumbs. That's what you're up against. So providing that the XFL can keep beating Appliance Direct infomercials, then it should be fine.
You would think. I think Meltzer said there's enough money invested in it for it to last at least 2.5 years. So it should outlive the first one unless something truly drastic takes place.
Oh, well, we shall see. But hey, look, no one's here to talk about mistakes of the past improved in the future. We're here just to talk about mistakes of the past, namely the early years of Monday Night Raw.
Yes, ones that weren't improved upon.
Oh, Jesus, and that's saying something. So, Justin Henry, this is where you and I will sit down and we'll watch an old episode of Monday Night Raw and we'll talk about it. We're watching every single episode in the history of Monday Night Raw. This is episode 69. Nice.
Nice.
And and if you want to join us one week, we're on the WWE Network. You can watch the episode. And then next week, share your notes if you so felt like the requirement too. But enough of that nonsense. Where and when are we this week, Justin Henry?
Well, we're at the end of a long TV taping. This aired on Monday, July 4th, 1994, Independence Day here in the U.S. It was taped 2 weeks earlier from the Westchester County Civic Center in White Plains, New York. And, in fact, at the time of this episode aired, a new set of tapings had taken place, which sadly did not end well for one particular member, veteran member of the WWF roster.
Now, we've got this crossover at the moment, and something that has happened on the day that this taping goes out that I think we should probably address early on. And this comes from the Wrestling Observer. Longtime WWF referee Joey Morella passed away in the early morning of July the 4th. So on the day this is going out, the morning of this particular TV taping, Joey Morella passed away. Morella was 30 years old. And he was at the end, he finished this lengthy TV taping, as Justin just talked about, in Ocean City, where he worked a couple of matches, including the last match of the night. He left in a car with Harvey Whippleman to the Newark Jetport, where they were going to be staying and then flying the next day. He apparently fell asleep at the wheel and the car crashed into a guardrail. Harvey Whippleman, who was wearing his seatbelt, escaped with minor cuts and bruises, whilst Joey Morella, who wasn't, was thrown from the car and killed, believed to have been instantaneously. And now this is quite a tough one when you consider that Joey Morella's dad, Gorilla Monsoon, was very much a figure on TV at this point and on that touring loop as well.
Well, bear in mind that the show that aired here, you may have mixed up a little bit when you were talking there. The tapings that I referenced having just happened over this weekend, this is not part of those tapings that the show is airing here. Just clear that up.
Right, okay, cool.
just making sure. But yeah, Monsoon's doing commentary for these tapings because these were recorded when Vince was having neck surgery just prior to his steroid trial. And Monsoon, of course, is the father of Joey Morella, which is I didn't even know until after he had died. It was never really mentioned on the air. Although years later, you watch old matches where Jesse Ventura makes fun of Morella for him, for his incompetent officiating with Monsoon sitting next to him. You know, just like a little playful nudge, a little nod to how they may be connected somehow. We're not sure when the commentary for the show was recorded because usually the indication we get is when it's a taped episode, they do the commentary the day of, sitting in the, working like all the topical headlines they can, and what's in the news today? Oh, well, this happened today, so obviously we're live, and the matches are 2 or 3 weeks old. I couldn't imagine Monsoon doing commentary that night, knowing, the fact that his son died in a car accident that morning. So I'm listening carefully to the commentary through this whole show, and for a while there was no topical references until he gets into a later match where he discusses the Wimbledon tennis tournament. In fact, Martina Navratilova lost her match, and then I did some research. That was the Saturday before, so this commentary could have been recorded no earlier than Saturday evening.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, maybe he did record it or before Monday, when his son hadn't been killed yet. But then, I realized they had that big TV taping loop, and then that's what his son was driving back from when he was in the accident. Monsoon would have likely been on that same loop. He might not have had time to record commentary for Raw until he got back to, New York or Stanford or wherever. So I'm thinking there's a pretty good chance Monsoon did this commentary with the knowledge that his son had been killed that morning.
I mean, that's a tough thing to deal with. I couldn't fathom going into work on the day or the moments after something like that has happened. I could not fathom it. Although, the only incident that this rules parallels to, I believe it was Jim Ross's mum who passed away the day he landed in the UK to do a pay-per-view.
Well, that was the Capital Carnage pay-per-view in 98, I believe. And
the idea of working through that, I believe the WWE even said, look, Jim, you can go home. And he was like, no, I'm here. I'm going to work.
Sometimes people, they just soldier through when there are situations like that. They just they don't want to have a change of their routine. They just want to be, you know, doing what they're familiar with. And Monsoon, I could see him being, you know, old school like that, you know, wanting to do that. But there's like no change in his voice at all. He just sounded like Gorilla Monsoon the way he always would on any broadcast. There was no change in tone. There was no somberness, nothing.
It's unreal. It really is. I'm hoping that it was recorded beforehand. I just otherwise I don't know how I'd have got through. I personally wouldn't have got through something like that. Love and energy to Joey Morello, who has passed away during our timeline. Do you want something a little bit brighter?
Absolutely.
Ludwig Borg is back, baby.
Wait, where?
At rings in Japan.
Oh, he's back in Pog form.
Oh, if only.
Ludwig Borg of Pogs.
Oh, mate, yes, please. John Eiley. Ludwig Borg of Pogs, loads of them. Lots of different designs.
Or Ludwig Borg just hanging out with Alf, either way.
I mean, yeah, both are really good. So on this very day, Rings in Japan announced the signing of Tony Holm, a.k.a. Ludwig Borger, billed as the first pro wrestler to join Rings besides Akira Maeda. His first match is booked for the 20th of August in Yokohama, Japan. He left the WWF when he broke his ankle, and there must have been some other issues there because he never returned. And the gimmick wasn't anywhere near as successful as the spot it was given, according to Dave Meltzer, which is fairly true.
And in fact, you know, they had Tatanka's shriek end at the hands of the wrong person, pretty much.
Yeah.
Someone's going to be gone in 6 months.
It's a shame. But they continue to protect Tatanka, as we'll get to in this particular episode. Hulk Hogan. On the 2nd of July, they had a very brief clip on WCW television of Hulk Hogan training with George Foreman.
Yes, the man who got the grill instead of him.
It was described by Dave Meltzer very much the same way that you would describe using Splash against a water Pokemon. Completely ineffective. Hogan did an interview where he told Jimmy Hart, basically, if Sherry Martel interfered in Hogan's match with Ric Flair, Jimmy Hart had carte blanche to punch Sherry Martel, which got complaints for the network.
Well, bear in mind, she does have a size advantage over Jimmy Hart.
Absolutely, and a fist advantage. She'd knock him dead.
Well, yes, in a fight, I bet on Sherry. I just had a startling realization. George Foreman was old then, and yet he was 6 months away from winning the world title again.
George Foreman is one of those guys that's just, when I mean this with absolute love, has always been old.
And there was a time when George Foreman was kind of thin when he was fighting Ali back in the 70s. At this point, he was like Michelin Man with boxing gloves on. He would just stand at the corner. He had no finesse. He would just punch you in the head and you'd go down. he was like somewhere in between Classic Foreman and Butterbean at this point in his career.
That's what a girth of people. I like that a lot.
George Foreman's like 70 now. I still wouldn't mess with him.
Oh, God, no. He's a beast. A couple of other WWF to WCW bits in this particular timeline. Bret Hart was on the Fan in Toronto on the radio, and he was talking about Hulk Hogan moving to WCW, saying, to me, it's a sad, pathetic ending for a guy who was a legend, who had a legacy with the WWF. He's going to AAA, the baseball term for top minor league group. I didn't know that. That's good to know. Not the wrestling promotion, obviously. Basically, is what you're saying by having Hogan move to WCW. He's moving to the minor leagues.
Right.
Also, go on.
It's kind of funny how these comments sound in hindsight, like how everyone forgets that when Flair was having problems with WCW back in 98, Hunter was asked about it on some radio show or whatever. And keep in mind, Hunter, you know, the guy who idolizes Flair, said he's old and washed up and we don't need him here in WWF and things like that. And of course, you know, a few years later, you know, Flair's his mentor on screen. He's his manager. And funny how all that works out.
Funny how things work out when there's money involved. Arn Anderson was speaking on the Wrestling Insiders radio show. He talked about forming a new Four Horsemen, and he extended the invite to Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect. Once his contract is up with the WWF and he can join WCW, Arn Anderson has invited him to join the Horsemen.
You can have my spot.
we're about like 4 years from that, aren't we, or something? Where this
3 years.
You can have my spot because I'm okay. You can have Paul Roma's spot.
Conrad also answered. Arnold also answered the phone call of a 13-year-old lad who wanted to start a podcast with him. And Arnold said he had no idea what the hell he was talking about.
I don't want to
chat me up. I'm 12 and I'm shaving.
Sorry, that joke made me drop my microphone.
And it wasn't that funny now, come on.
Oh, no, it was gravity rather than the comedy.
Okay, just making sure.
One other turncoat that is worth noting that nobody really gives any attention to is Tom Hunt, who was one of the stage production guys on the WWF WrestleMania Revenge Tour, and he's been with the company for quite a while. He quietly joined World Championship Wrestling to run the WCW hotline.
Well, that's comparable to Luger being on the first Nitro, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically up there. What's this guy? Oh. And they changed his name. What's Tom Hunting doing in the Impact Zone?
Good Tom Hunting.
Good Tom Hunting.
Yes, he draws all the hotline info on the chalkboard, and Robin Williams is impressed.
I'd say, John, go and do that, but I don't think you'll find a picture of Tom Hunt from WWF Production, to be honest.
Oh, let's not doubt John here.
That's true. If you can find one, John, then you rock and or roll. One final note. Davey Boy Smith is booked for shows in England in September. He's going to team with Bret Hart against Owen and Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Also, on this looping tour, we'll see Undertaker versus Yokozuna in a casket match, and Alundra Blaze versus Bull Nakano. Also, Razor Ramon versus Diesel. And on some places, we'll see Ramon and Lex Luger teaming to take on Shawn Michaels and Diesel. So Bulldog potentially making a full-time return very soon.
It's actually not a bad-sounding tour given the era.
No, it was. We talked about this on another podcast. I don't want to sort of jump through the portal here into the Indie Wrestling is Dead podcast that I do with North Wrestling, but we actually pulled up the card for this particular tour that's coming up, the European tour, that took place at... there was a UK show that took place in Newcastle, or outside of Newcastle, at Whitley Bay Ice Rink. And which is basically now it's the home of the Whitley Warriors ice hockey team. But the idea of this being like the mecca of pro wrestling, which it was for a while, because WWF did about 6 shows from Whitley Bay Ice Rink.
Okay, mecca. All right, slow down. Mecca.
The mecca.
Mecca like a high.
You know what I mean by the mecca, or is that is that a weird Tom term that I just assume everybody knows?
No, mecca usually implies like you know, like the ultimate hub where everybody goes to, you know, genuflect, not some ice rink that...
Exactly, and that's why it was weird, because there were so many other venues around, but the WWF decided, hey, when we got a Newcastle, we could do the big arena, but let's do that ice rink just up the road. It's like, okay.
Well, they probably figured you were all poor.
They were very poor at this point. And the idea of Yokozuna resting on the ice is treacherous, to say the very least.
That's why they did it. Now, you bring that up so I can bring this up.
Absolutely, mate.
Okay. Speaking of local shows, this is timely.
Go on.
On Saturday, July 9th, 1994, the same week as this episode of Raw, I'm sure I'm in Detroit, yes, it's a Saturday, WWE had the audacity to run a 3-part tour. They had part of the roster over in Europe. They had part of the roster up in New York. And they ran a C show in Seabrook, New Jersey, which is 10 minutes from where I live, at the Cumberland Regional High School.
Where I've
watched players in my high school play football before. I have sat in the bleachers at this school. Now, the show in Long Island has Brett versus Owen. It's got Savage versus Lawler. It's got IRS versus Tatanka. It's got some big matches. The European Tour's got Razor versus Diesel, Luger versus Crush, Bigelow, Mabel, Alundra, Luna. Some big matches over there. What did we get in Seabrook, New Jersey? on July 9th, 1994.
Cool.
Well, I didn't go to the show, but I'm wishing I had. We got a 6-match show. These are the matches. I am not making this card up. In the opener, Jim Powers defeated Damian Demento.
That big Jim Powers push going strong.
As I read through the next 5 matches, that may have been the second best match of this show. In the second match, in a case of midget madness, the Mighty Doom defeated Little Leopard. I'm making sure this apparently is a WWF show.
Jeez.
In the third match, bear in mind, I am not making this up. I feel I need to keep saying that. Sergeant Slaughter defeated Quebecer Pierre.
Wow. That would be a Ring of Honor main event now.
Actually, it would. In the fourth match, Iron Mike Sharp got a goddamn win when he defeated local Jimmy Snuka Patsy, Glenn Osborne.
Oh, man! Mike Sharp! This is the beginning of the Sharp era.
Why was I not made aware of this show? In the fifth match, in women's action, Heidi Lee Morgan, who lives in, I should point out, lives in a neighboring city from me because she's an instructor at my local gym, defeated Rusty Thomas.
Ah, oh, great,
know
Rusty
either.
Thomas, the legend, the Hall of future Hall of Fame ballot, Rusty Thomas. That now, does sound like a medical condition.
It does. Now, those were the first 5 matches of the show. The main event.
Here we go.
For this show. In a match that I would have wanted to see if this was 1982, Bob Backlund defeated Greg the Hammer Valentine.
My way or the highway, see things my way. What a match! Oh, old grudge is settled. The new era, the new WWF generation.
They not only ran this card, they ran it the previous night in Wildwood, New Jersey, at the Wildwood Convention Center, which holds 5,000 people, and I couldn't imagine how many that drew. And not only that, they ran it Thursday night in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, in front of 200 people.
Hey, why mess with success?
Why did I not go to this show? I would have gone to this show.
I'm actually really disappointed with you for not going to that show.
I wasn't even aware of it. Where the hell are you going to advertise it? It's Seabrook, New Jersey. Have you heard of Seabrook, New Jersey?
I've heard of Seabrook Crisps.
That's not the same thing.
Okay, fair enough.
Nothing has flavor in Seabrook. I almost got a job in Seabrook once.
Oh, did you? What was the job?
Working in this frozen foods warehouse.
Nice.
Thank God I didn't get it.
You might have seen some Seabrook Crisps.
My ex-employer got a job there and almost severed his arm falling through a trailer that was not properly bound to the dock, shall we say.
Seabrook sounds amazing.
It's Seabrook, it's a hell of a town.
When we eventually meet face-to-face to do one of these live in front of a studio audience.
Oh, God.
Which is going to happen in before I die this year.
Don't threaten me, please.
What, with my death or a live show? we need to then do a special Cultaholic documentary on Tom and Justin's Road to Seabrook. And we
it's
need
not
to go
really
for a day in Seabrook.
It's not really that special. There's a hardware store, maybe a convenience store, maybe a courthouse. I don't know.
It sounds amazing. I want to go to Seabrook with you, Justin.
You are easily impressed.
Yes, mate, I am. I want to be there. Anyway, I also want to be back in 1994. So, whilst I look up local attractions for Seabrook, Illinois...
Illinois.
which Seabrook are we in?
New Jersey.
Oh, of course. Sorry, I'm an idiot. It's early in the morning. That's my excuse.
There's a big difference between Jersey and Illinois. Actually, not much.
Because Seabrook, as we all know, Seabrook, New Jersey is an unincorporated community located within Upper Deerfield Township in Cumberland County, New Jersey.
That's my county.
That's your one, boy. Whilst I'm looking up local attractions for Seabrook, New Jersey, why don't you talk us through this week's episode of Monday Night Raw, sir?
Oh, fun fact about Seabrook, New Jersey. Who's that girl from Top Gun? What was her name? Kelly McGillis?
Kelly McGillis rings a bell.
Kelly McGillis. Isn't she the one from Top Gun? I'm researching real fast. I think that's the one. Yes, That's correct. She was a love interest in Top Gun. She was actually in her retirement, a drug rehab counselor in Seabrook, New Jersey.
Oh, there you go. So there's some celebrity, some stardust in Seabrook.
Well, yes, plus Greg the Hammer Valentine and Rusty Thomas.
Mate, there's a museum there.
I don't know.
No, there is. There's a museum with two rooms with displays and video kiosks that tell the story of Seabrook Farms.
I passed through to get to Delaware. but anyway, on with this amazing, amazing show that was clearly hour three of a taping and potentially compromised by Monsoon having a lot on his mind. We don't know for sure when this was recorded. But Monsoon begins by letting us know that the hot dogs and hamburgers are running wild.
What a weird sentence to start the show.
I know what he was going for. It's cookout day. It's the 4th of July. But they're not running wild.
This is something that somebody would say if they were recording whilst hungry.
Yes, which he very well could have been. On that day in America, you know, you just smell the propane in the air. You smell the cooking meat. All the grilled food, you smell the potato salad. It's all wafting through the air. This big cloud hanging over the United States. You're just hungry that day.
Big cloud of cookouts and body slammed Samoans.
Absolutely. So Savage, of course, is festively dressed in red, white, and blue. He's ready for the occasion.
Always. He always looks fab.
Now, I don't want to get on Monsoon because I know this was a rough day for him, especially if we recorded this commentary on Monday, anytime after it happened.
But let us assume, right, because I'm thinking if there's Wimbledon references and such like that, and there's another reference later on that makes me think that it's not as along the line as we may think, let's assume he did it the day before.
Okay. Monsoon and Savage are doing the two shot at ringside. And again, for the opening match, it's Tatanka versus Jeff Jarrett. And Monsoon says, inside the square circle, the country western star Jeff Jarrett awaiting Tatanka. He said this.
Oh, yes, he did. That confused me, actually, because I thought we're getting already in the ring type malarkey.
Yeah, so you're thinking Jeff Jarrett's already in the ring doing the jobber entrance. I was getting ready to actually put that in my notes. Tatanka enters, and then Jarrett enters because he was not in the ring.
Yeesh.
And Monsoon actually said this live while standing at ringside.
So he could actually look in the ring and definitely not see Jeff Jarrett.
Was he wearing like horse blinders or something? Had he been misled? was he just not paying attention?
Maybe he was facing the wrong way.
Maybe
he thought Jeff Jarrett was the ref.
That is quite a blunder. Monsoon does ask if there's a difference between country and western, which is a good Blues Brothers nod.
Nah, I like that. I thought it was a fun little touch.
We have both kinds, country and western. So at one point, Monsoon does say Suplex City.
Yes, I wrote that in my notes. This is where a young Brock Lesnar was watching the wrestling and went, "Oh, that's a nice idea."
No. Brock Lesnar's not going to watch wrestling. Come on now.
Aww. Fair enough.
You think Brock had cable?
That's true.
He's too busy beating a cow to death for dinner. It's the 4th of July, he's going to eat the whole thing.
I do seem to recall Gorilla Monsoon using Suplex City or insert move here city quite a bit during his heyday.
Yeah, he did. So maybe that part was the impetus for Brock adopting that phraseology in 2015.
Yeah, I reckon so.
Now, I have a question for you, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
You know this whole anti-violence thing that WWE's on where they can't even, like, mention conflict and all that?
Malarkey? Yeah. So this is a new thing that they've put into place. We talked about this on the podcast last week. So no low blows or eye gouges, no threats to break body parts. So basically, you're a wrestling company. You're not really allowed to talk about violence too much.
No glowering.
No long stares for too long.
Now, I ask that because Tatanka doesn't have his red hair anymore. Is it possible that someone at the Nevermind thought that it was blood and they said, no, we can't have that?
Do you know what? Like, based on the stuff that we talked about last week, it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, this is not going to be a fun era. Thank God I had ECW.
This is a really tough time for WWF, where they've... It's always good to make a company stand out by being the antithesis of other wrestling, but this is to a detrimental degree. And it affects segments throughout the night.
In the months ahead, there are going to be episodes of Raw that are a complete blur to me or possibly new to me, because I was feasting on ECW, The Simpsons, Married with Children, and Seinfeld, because I fancy myself a young adult, and I knew this stuff was insulting to me, even though I was 11.
Yeah, well, we've got all that to look forward to.
So Randy Savage utters the following sentence, because he's doing his best to keep me invested in this show. It's in regards to Jarrett possibly losing this match and the implications of what happens if you lose on national TV. He says, "If you're embarrassed here, you're embarrassed all over the world, including Pluto, Mars, and the moon."
Those famous parts of the Earth.
Yes, over in Pluto, Kazakhstan, they're going to be making fun of you. For losing to a guy who can't even dye his hair anymore.
John, could you please draw some aliens on the moon being embarrassed or laughing at Tatanka and Jeff Jarrett?
I feel like doing the same thing here.
What, going to the moon?
No, just being embarrassed.
Do you know what? I know we'll talk more as the match goes on, but just to give this some context from my point of view, I didn't think it was the worst TV match that we've ever had in a while. I didn't think it was bad.
No, this was a fine match, actually. This was I wrote at the end of my notes here, this is the best match of this taping.
Wow. Yeah, that's about right, actually.
It's like being valedictorian in a summer school. So we get a nice fake out ending here, where Jarrett keeps beating Tatanka up on the floor, keeps posting him, running his back into the apron, wearing him down, sort of methodical stuff, and he just rolls in and wins by count out. Like, well, okay, that's that then. On to the next thing. But no, Jarrett, his hubris gets the best of him. He takes the microphone. First, he badmouths Savage in the eternal angle that will never go anywhere. Until they're in TNA in a decade, and even then that doesn't go anywhere. They're not meant to feud with each other. It just isn't meant to be. Jarrett wants the match to continue because he does not want to win by countout. He wants to pin Tatanka. Famous last words.
Now, with this, I was very confused. Okay, well, the countout was obviously to protect Tatanka, because they're still keen to keep him relatively unpinned, unsheathed. But then Jeff Jarrett saying, "I want to pin Tatanka, restart this match," felt, and what you say there about hubris is true. It did feel quite unheely, though. Like, a good heel would go, "Yes, I beat Tatanka. See you later. That's my day done."
Well, based on Monsoon's commentary that followed, I mean, I agree with you. I agree with what you're saying. But Monsoon's commentary that followed that, where he's talking about, like, "I would have taken the winner's share of the purse. What's he doing?" Which just make Jarrett look like an idiot.
Yeah.
Because when the match is over, Jarrett looks like an even bigger idiot. Because not only does he lose, he's also humiliated in the process. So it's also supposed to be just one big ha-ha moment at Jarrett. So back to the
so
match.
It's strange to make Jarrett look this foolish.
Well, his dad's not taking over the company. Well, maybe they're thinking that, I don't know if you know this, but if Vince went to jail, Jerry Jarrett would have ran the company. Bruce Prichard denies this, but everybody else says it's true, including Jim Cornette and a few other people. So if Jerry Jarrett had taken over for X amount of time, he might have pushed his son hard. Maybe just for a goof, they were just screwing with Jeff beforehand, thinking like, well, he might have about 2 or 3 weeks left until his dad takes over the company. Let's just screw with him a little bit, have a little fun.
Do you reckon that might have been what it was?
Probably not, but I'm just going to throw it out there anyway.
there's possibly something to that.
I mean, it could be. It's, of course, you figure, you know, that wouldn't make any sense because, you know, if daddy takes over, it's like, these are the guys who were mean to me. Couldn't Jerry fire one of them?
It's why even give Jeff Jarrett the impetus to do that? But hey, sometimes Gorilla Monsoon, though, as we've seen on previous occasions where Gorilla Monsoon will probably lead stuff in a direction that they don't want it to go just because he is almost legitimately calling the affair.
Right.
So, like, the obvious thing would be to go, well, like, Jeff Jarrett's on the mic and saying this, surely, you know, instead of ridiculing him and exposing him, you could easily do still great commentary work by just saying, oh, who does this guy think he is? Like, out of the arrogance, thinking that he can pin Tatanka after that match he's been through. Oh, no, what's he thinking? You know, and play it like calling it like that. And I feel weird telling Gorilla Monsoon how to call. But there's been a few occasions where he will call stuff that doesn't really tell the story they're trying to tell in the ring.
Yeah, he kind of does invent his own angle.
He does, and it's like I think it was like when the Mr. Perfect thing was happening with Lex Luger, and the way the Gorilla was cutting down Mr. Perfect, like for a match that we would never see, it was just very strange, and how Gorilla had to get his heat back at the end when he's the interviewer. Very weird.
Well, yeah, Monsoon did do that with the whole Owen promo a few weeks ago, where he says, you got lucky when you beat Brett, when he beat him clean as a sheet.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, stop creating your own stories, Gorilla.
This should lead to an angle where Monsoon just turns heel on it, and like, I'm like, I hold the pen. I rewrite all the stories. Now Hulk Hogan's winless. So anyway, back to this match. Jarrett applies a sleeper hold for about 3 hours. Tatanka almost legitimately falls asleep, as did I.
It's a long sleep road.
It was. Tatanka fired up, got a DDT for two. Jarrett tries to bail. He's walking backwards to the locker room, which is a dead giveaway that someone's coming out to, you know, impede him somehow. Sure enough, it's Dink. If Jeff Jarrett had just torn Dink's throat out right now, would you have been upset?
I wouldn't have been too sad. Put it that way.
Same, same. Well, Dink squirts him with a flower. Because, you know, because he's a small clown. So before Jarrett can beat his ass, out runs Dink with a water bucket, causing Jarrett, the Wicked Witch of Nashville, to run back to the ring. He slides back in, and he's immediately rolled up and pinned by Tatanka.
Here's the thing. Why, when Jarrett insisted on restarting this match, would he then bail from the match?
Because he realized he couldn't beat Tatanka when he's all fired up.
So he was like, no, okay, I'll just take the loser's share after all, and I'll be away.
He was like, ah, rats, and I'm going to lose for sure.
And he did. And he did.
He most certainly did.
It leads me to think that the count-out shouldn't have happened.
No, it's... They were experimenting with that a little bit in different matches, because it will get revisited at a pay-per-view in a few months' time. They do a similar thing with Jeff Jarrett, mind you.
Where they do the count out and the restart.
Yes, but that time it works to his advantage. But yeah, it's definitely different. They don't do it too often after this. It was kind of just a thing of its time. And I kind of wish they would bring it back, because it would, you know, it would negate one finish, and the crowd's going to think, okay, well, obviously now he's going to lose. And then when he wins, it's like, oh, damn. So maybe... Maybe kind of just, you know, you set it up for later on. Like, you know, here's this plot device. You know how it's going to go. Or maybe you don't.
Yeah, I guess it adds that element of confusion.
Yeah, a little bit. And in this era, I'll take any cleverness I can get.
Good shout.
We have a promo for next week's Raw with Bret Hart versus the 1-2-3 Kid for the world title. I can't wait for the show.
I'm up for this. I'm really up for this. This feels like something fresh. This feels like what the new generation's all about. The whole Bret Hart 1-2-3 Kid.
I'll go as far as to say, for as long as we do this podcast, if this goes on and on for years, this will be the best match we watch on this show until we get to Owen and Davey in 97.
Gosh, really?
Yes.
Well,
and I will guarantee
really
that.
Excited and quite sad.
Well, that isn't to say that, you know, this match isn't great, because this match is great. This is Kid's best match ever.
Oh, man. Including the ones he had against Kane in 99, are you sure?
It's debatable, but I think I'd go with this one. And quite possibly Bret's best TV match ever, other than the I actually have a Benoit right in Owen's memory.
Oh, wow. Okay. And well, maybe, I'm excited for this now, then.
Oh, you will not be disappointed. So, yes. And on that show, we will have our good friend Sydney with us to watch it because she's she wanted to watch a good match with us. And I figured, well, there's no better one than this one. And it probably won't be any great ones for a while after this, so why not this one?
Yeah, so our friend Mod from the Cultaholic Discord, Sydney Zumowitz, back on the show next week, which will be nice.
She's definitely looking forward to it.
It's great because she was never born when any of this was going on, so the whole episode is going to be me and you just feeling very old.
Hang on, is Mabel on that show? Let me check.
Ah, yes, it's her favorite one.
Hang on, let me see, because I didn't really bother looking. Ah, damn, he's not.
Oh, man.
But on that show, we are going to see someone who was on Raw this week in what may have been his last appearance with the company.
Ooh. I think that might be. Next week.
You'll see.
Oh, okay, we'll see. Oh, that's a nice little tease. A hook and a tease, my friend.
Well, we promoted the Brett Kidd match as we segue into King's Court with 1-2-3 Kidd. And by the time this was over, I was rooting for Brett.
Yeah, this was... I get what this was trying to do, but it didn't do it very well.
Now, you've been watching X-Pac on the SmackDown review.
I have indeed, yes.
We've heard some Sean Waltman shoot interviews over the years where he's very blunt with his raspy voice and... I say that, you know, in a nice way. He has a very distinct way of talking. Just that deep Minnesota voice with the rasp. Oh, yeah, it was great working
Your
with Brett.
And, is grass, yes. And I'm going to smoke it, yeah! X-Pac promo.
Go to hell, Eric Bischoff. Yeah, you know that voice.
Yeah.
So we know Waltman to be very unfiltered. You know, I mean he's... very frank with his opinions, very frank with his memories. He doesn't hold back his opinion on something. Here he's the humble 1-2-3 Kidd. He's too humble.
Scott, or if you will, he is Shumble Too Humble, the lesser known member of Team Cool. Job?
Yeah, if you would.
All we're going to give you is Shumble Too Humble.
Lawler starts out by saying that Kidd was so thin in high school that his teacher kept marking him absent, which kind of made me laugh. That's not a bad line.
Yeah, I mean, Lawler's got great one-liners through these, but I think this whole anti-violence system, the G era, if you will, as you coined it last week.
As in god-awful.
I think, yeah. Or just guidance. we guide you not to watch it. The issue is, this is affecting Jerry Lawler the most, I feel, because it kind of makes, when you can't talk about acts of violence and you can't commit acts of violence and such if you're under certain circumstances, then it kind of makes these segments a bit pointless because there's nothing to do. If it's a heel and heel, you can build a storyline. But if it's a heel and a face, then as we learned here, you're very limited as to what you can do.
Yeah, you can't have any real tension. You can't have any posturing. You know, you can't really threaten each other. It does take away what you can do in terms of, you know, a business that's predicated on conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why are these two men feuding? Because there's conflict. Why are they hurting each other? Because there's conflict.
Although in this case, we're not too keen on the conflict part.
Keep in mind, it's the same network that airs Silk Stockings and a bunch of you know R-rated movies that, you know, I mean, obviously edited down for TV, but still, they have Savage plugging basically smutty movies. It's like, why is USA okay with those, but, you know, Lawler can't smash Duke Ferguson in the head with a freaking trash can.
It's that whole thing, I think, of WWF with all the nonsense going on. And I get kind of why they want to lean this way. They want to be whiter than white, if you will. They don't want to cause a single problem for the network. They want to just coast through.
You dropped out.
Oh, am I here? Can you hear me?
Yeah, you keep dropping out.
Oh, do I? Oh, okay. Should I restart the call? Is it getting too bad?
It was just that one part.
Okay. But it's okay now.
Yeah, you said the word white, but then you just dropped out for like 6 seconds.
All right, fair enough. I was just being racist. No, okay.
Yes, of course.
Hang on. They're trying to be whiter than white, so they don't want to cause any problems to the network. They don't want to be flagged up on any USA meetings about conduct and show etiquette or anything like that. They want to try and play it very safe, and I get that. But they've gone so far the other way. They've gone too whiter than white, and now they've really, basically, they've handcuffed themselves with what they can do.
Yeah, and this promo, even though kids talking about a fellow babyface, it felt too squeaky clean because, well, first I got to point out Savage and say the kid can grab that brass ring. So Vince may have been on headset here, or at least producing it. Lawler tells Kid he's going to pull for him in a match next week because he hates Brett that much. Well, he's consistent.
Yeah.
But Kid is the president of the Bret Hart fan club here. He says, Brett is the best wrestler in the world today. You know, I owe a lot to Bret Hart. I don't hate him. You know, he's my idol. And this promo would get him booed today.
It would, wouldn't it?
Jason Jordan would look at this and be like, dude, show some teeth.
It's funny because it's true.
This is X-Pac. It is so anodyne and sugary. It's just like I hope Brett mops the floor with him in that match. Although spoiler, it's a great match, and as another best match of Kid's career. But watch this promo and tell me that if somebody cut this on Raw today, that you'd be pulling for them.
If it leads to a heel turn, then yes.
Well, it feels like ironic where he's like.
The problem is, it's not so much the words that 1-2-3 Kid is saying, it's the lack of conviction. Many years ahead of this, Triple H and Hulk Hogan, Backlash 2002. Right, okay.
Mm-hmm.
The match was dreadful because this was Triple H's wrestling like he is wading knee deep in toffee era. And mm-hmm. Hulk Hogan was Hulk Hogan. But in the promo leading up to that, Triple H, there's one line that Triple H said that really resonated with me and I think really made the match pertinent, where Triple H said, "It is an honor to wrestle Hulk Hogan. I'm really excited, but also I'm really sad because I have to take a piece of my childhood and I have to destroy it."
Fair point.
Oh, that's a great line. Oh, that's a great line. That's somebody going, this is my icon, my childhood hero, and I have to step up and face them, and I'm going to be them. And it breaks my heart. And I don't expect that level of arrogant hubris from Sean Waltman, but I want that I wanted that element of, like, I grew up watching this guy and now I've got to face him in the ring, and it's amazing, but I'm also, you know, it's daunting because I have to, in order to become the WWF champion, I have to defeat a man that I look up to.
Like, he said everything short of gee golly gosh.
Oh, gee, Rick. It was basically Morty.
There was a point in this promo where he says, "I'm going to give it 110%. Maybe Brett will make a mistake."
Oh, like, God. That line. Maybe Brett will make a mistake. So that's your strategy then, is it? Hoping that the other guy goofs. Brilliant. Well in, mate.
Jiminy Jillikers. It's Fallout, Sean.
Do you know what? Do you know what would have been great if, and I'm just booking this promo for him, where he'd said, "I've been watching Bret Hart my entire life, and I know how to get out of the sharpshooter."
So, okay, that'd been a little bit better.
Yeah, where he just goes, I figured out a way to get out of the sharpshooter.
Well, except for when Owen put on the King of the Ring and he submit immediately.
Oh, yeah. He has a damn it!
Wow.
Nobody was injured, but he was injured, to be fair.
I hate to be the wet blanket here.
Oh, you fine. I figured out a counter to the Brett's rope fist drop.
Brett, you use the same 5 moves in every match, and I'm going to scout all of them.
I'm just going to scout all 5 moves. Done. Box ticked.
That'd be great.
But this, so yeah, so this wasn't a strong promo, and it doesn't finish particularly strong either.
No, this is I think this was the last plug for that match during the show. So once he got to that point, it was like, it's like, well, that's your soft sell, I guess. Which is the one that did Tain and Love, I believe.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Then we have a plug for the Summer Sizzler Tour. I missed the WrestleMania Revenge Tour already because the Summer Sizzler Tour, they tell us, action's so hot, you gotta wear shades.
And you know it's hot in there to wear shades because they put shades on the WWF logo.
I'm guessing Seabrook was sold out because they didn't plug that show on this thing.
Got it for Seabrook.
Seabrook was the instant sellout, all 12 seats.
No point advertising Seabrook.
Yeah, because hot town, that is. It was the double or nothing of WWF.
Oh, it was. They're going to go back there every single year. It's their Las Vegas.
Emphasis on nothing. And speaking of nothing, this match. It's maybe the worst jobber match in the history of Raw to this point.
Are we about to talk about Jim the Anvil Neidhart versus Gary Scott?
As John Goodman would say in the Bill Brassy sketches, we certainly are.
Oh, get in. Wow. This was a thing.
Okay, so first we begin with Savage doing his usual ogling of the Raw placard girl. And Monsoon talks about how much he loves Mediterranean girls. Which, hey, God bless the guy.
Who doesn't, I guess.
So then, my favorite part of Jim Neidhart being back in this era is he's using Brett's old music, the old Heart Foundation theme.
Oh, isn't that a beautiful douchey move?
It's the kids go nuts, then out walks Neidhart and the crowd's pissed. It's
everything. It's everything. I love it so much. Hit that music. Old music. It's like he found it in a bin.
It was his music for a few years, so he's allowed. He's still entitled to use it. Jim Neidhart, I don't think he's wrestled a match in 6 years at this point, and it showed.
Is it really his first match in 6 years?
It's not six, but it may as well have been.
Oh, jeez.
His first move is to bite Gary Scott's face. And then Gorilla Monsoon says the following line, which I wrote verbatim. It is, dentists all over the world are in envy right now. What?
Because he can bite a man?
Shouldn't dogs be in envy? Shouldn't Hannibal Lecter be in envy? So this may lend credence to my theory that Monsoon was in the midst of the worst day of his life at this point.
Do you think like lines like this, I mean, it would excuse it, obviously.
Yes, what I'm saying is he may not have been in the right frame of mind to do this show. So I'm not trying to make fun here because I understand this. I can't imagine what that horror must have been like.
Yeah.
But fair enough. Without knowing that context, listening to the show, you're just, huh?
Yeah. But that being said, this match is awful.
Randy Savage, though, does get bonus points for making the first timely reference in the history of the show that actually applies to an ongoing angle and is somewhat clever. See, there's a big Disney cartoon now that went called The Lion King. And Randy Savage calls Owen Hart the Lion. L-Y-I-N apostrophe King.
The Lion King. Not the Lion King. He's a Lion King.
he does force it, but you know what? That's actually not bad.
Yeah. I liked that. I thought that was a nice little slightly cringy topical reference, but I'll take it.
And while I was pondering just how clever that was, we're back to biting again. Neidhart has run out of moves.
Literally 4 minutes into this match, he ran out of moves.
At 2 points in the course of this match, they have to cut the Owen at ringside so that he can yell taunts at the camera in lieu of watching whatever Neidhart's doing.
It's just slow. When he's not biting, it's just slow.
Savage tells us, "What evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow knows, and so do I."
Deep for Savage?
Well, that's from a radio show.
Mm.
That would be The Shadow.
Of course. I wasn't aware of that. I thought it was a random mention.
I learned that quote not from that show, but from Orson Welles at Frank Sinatra's roast in the 70s, watching the clip of it. When he says, it reminds me of The Shadow, when he said, "What evil lurks in the hearts of men?" Believe me, Frank knows. I thought it was kind of funny.
I like it.
I don't have Orson Welles' deep voice, so I can't really add the gravitas to it. So Neidhart goes to a chin lock during this alleged match.
And I love the fact that it's just your basic one-on-one. He's a heel. He has to just be nefarious to beat him. But no, let's put a chin lock on for ages. Let's give bloody Scott a hope spot during this nonsense match.
What's your name? I'm effed.
Yeah. Gary, I'm effed. All right, just put me in a chin lock. That's all I know how to do.
So then he just pulls him up and hits the anvil flattener and wins from there. That's it.
Is that what it's called? The anvil flattener?
I found that out years later, apparently. It is called the anvil flattener.
Because I thought it was a little cheeky prelude to the return of the Bulldog.
I mean, he always used a power slam as a finish anyway, so even in his old Hart Foundation days when he did singles matches.
So, oh, I mean, fair that's... enough. I just thought he just adopted Bulldog's finish as if to go, oh, hey.
Well, it's a little bit different. Bulldog was the over-the-shoulder, and Neidhart was just like the across-the-chest version.
It's a good finish, actually. It's a good finish.
Well, it's a 280-pound barrel-chested power lifter. Of course, him squashing to the mat, it's simple enough.
It's the only thing about Anvil's offense that's actually any good.
Well, actually, he used to have that slingshot into the ring that where like this is, where Brett would send somebody into the ropes and then grab the top rope and then slingshot Neidhart and he'd fly right into the guy's head. That was always cool.
Oh, yeah. Vaguely remember that.
Neidhart at one time was agile AF.
Look at you with the kids speak. Agile AF.
Well, I couldn't say the other thing on this show.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
But I think it's clear that Neidhart's best days are behind him at this point.
Yeah, but I like that he's been brought in for this angle. It makes sense that he is in for this particular story that they're telling. The fact that he's aligned himself with Owen Hart adds that little bit of extra tension. Yeah. I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, it's fine. Just, you know,
make him wrestle.
Yeah, especially singles matches. If it's a tag with Owen, then you got a shot.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's the new, and bring him out in the Zubaz.
Yes, always the Zubaz. Is that him and Owen wear those old New Foundation pajamas again?
I'd like him to.
You know, the hammer pants.
I love the hammer pants.
The hammer pants are great in any era. I don't care.
It was a strong look. The high energy. It was. Especially.
Don't tell Owen that. Duke the Dumpster Jersey versus Iron Mike Sharp. I wrote, oh man, this has to be a rib. Because if you think about it, you take Iron Mike Sharp, who is a notorious sufferer of OCD, and you put him in the ring with a garbage man.
I never even thought of that.
I'm so sick. That's the first thing I thought of.
That's amazing. That's incredible.
Get a load of this. You know that trash man we have? Yeah, we're gonna make Sharp wrestle him.
Oh. I thought Sharp looked nervous. Now I know why.
I wish I could have seen the water bill for the Westchester County Civic Center that month.
Somebody left a shower running for like 4 hours after the event. No, they didn't leave it running. Somebody was in it. It was Iron Mike Sharp. He wrestled a bin man.
He was all shriveled up at the end. He looked like a toe.
I mean, I've thought about Mike Sharp's OCD quite a bit. And not loads. Like, I've thought about other stuff, like doing a food shop and, you know, booking a restaurant for Valentine's Day. I've thought about other stuff.
Sure.
But it's always top of my mind. And I think that he was a very hirsute man, wasn't he? Iron Mike Sharp. Very hirsute, very hairy boy.
Yes, very, very, very hairy. He was. He did have. Wasn't quite George Steele levels, but he was definitely. Not a proponent of Nair.
No, not in the slightest. And the thing is that when you're quite hairy, your skin does naturally look like it's a bit dirtier because obviously the placement of hair. And I notice that sometimes where, like, because I've, you know, I'm not ashamed to say it, I'm quite a hairy boy myself. And you sometimes think, oh, I look mucky when actually I'm not. It's just that I'm hairy. And I am like shot with OCD and having that kind of mental complex plus being hairy. That is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, especially when facing the garbage man.
Especially when you're facing a man who is a bin man.
Yes. And I'm as happy Sharp was here because he is the world's loudest wrestler, and that makes me happy. Anytime he goes for a slam, he gets slammed. I missed him in Seabrook.
You missed him in Seabrook, man.
I'm trying to hear him from Millville.
They called that match he won. They called it the Seabrook Miracle.
There were no miracles in Seabrook.
There was. Mike Sharp won a match.
But besides that, there was a goddamn anomaly.
He gets a lot of offense in this, though.
He does. Yeah. It is kind of 50-50 with him and Duke here. As Monson goes on about the meaning of Independence Day, about how we're not subservient to anyone, I hope you wrote that down.
Yes, boss, I did.
Yeah, it's a very important day. It's why we eat hot dogs, and for you, it's just whatever day of the week it is.
It's normally a Thursday. No, that's Thanksgiving, sorry.
It varies year to year.
Either way, we'll be working.
Savage plugs Al Pacino's Sea of Love, which I assume had some conflict in it. Maybe someone got hit in the head with a trash can.
I don't remember the Al Pacino movie Sea of Love. Do you remember Sea of Love?
It was late 80s. I don't really remember a whole lot about it.
It's the story of troubled New York City detective Frank Keller, who investigated a serial killer who finds victims using personal ads in a magazine and leaves the song Sea of Love playing at his crime scenes.
Is this one where he goes, hoo-ah?
No, that's Roman Reigns you're thinking of.
Hooray!
John Goodman's in it.
Oh wow!
He plays Al Pacino's partner, Sherman Toohey.
Yeah, I thought we were going to say Walter Sobchak.
So if you ever, sadly not. So
the song is not the issue here.
If you ever wanted a buddy cop drama that featured Al Pacino and John Goodman, then you are in for a treat with Sea of Love.
I get you to it by 3 o'clock. Hooray!
I was Fred Flintstone once.
Hooray! Why'd you kill Fredo? Hooray!
Hooray! I mean,
he deserved it. He went against the family.
Hooray!
Barney! Hooray! John, Al Pacino is Barney Rubble. I don't ask for much.
Thank you, John.
It could be Scarface Pacino. It could be Michael Corleone Pacino. It could be Devil's Advocate Pacino. It could be Sam Woman Pacino. I don't care which Pacino. Al Pacino as a Barney Rubble.
Thank you very much, John. I'm down for this.
Hooray. So Monsoon says it's et cetera headache time as he runs through all of his catchphrases.
Oh, he's like crossed them off at this point, isn't he? Just burning through them.
Now, we come to a very interesting line. As Savage talks about running someone's head into a turnbuckle, because Duke does the Iron Mike here, he says he's got to do it 7 more times. It's like 7 more times, there's only 3 more buckles. Monsoon says, this is not an octagon. Savage goes, yeah, it's a family program. They were bashing UFC in 94.
That's incredible.
They were insecure about it then.
Oh, look at this unfriendly program, the UFC. God.
You know what? You're right. Brock was watching this show.
He was. I love that. It's like any combat. The WWF at this point is an absolute mind F because they are competitive with other wrestling and sporting bodies, but don't do anything violent. Don't do anything. What are you trying to do? It's like, I see that mansion that you built over there. We're going to build a better mansion, but we're going to do it using buttons. That's what we're going to do. All buttons. And hey, you're rubbish for using bricks and mortar. We're building out of buttons. For God's sake, lads.
And we leave all the sex bots to Al Pacino. That's not enough. This match gets more surreal. It takes a lot to take away from Iron Mike Sharp. But then Monson goes in his Wimbledon anecdote about Martina Navratilova losing on Saturday. And he congratulates, and I'm quoting here, Conchita, whatever her name is.
Oh, for God's sake.
And then Savage goes,
that bit.
and then Savage, not to be outdone, goes, Conchita, banana, gorilla.
Oh, for God's sake.
Boy, would that not wash today. It's Conchita Martinez, for those of you out there wondering. She's from Spain.
Jeez. Yeah, that would, in 2020, that kind of stuff would get you cancelled.
Oh, yeah. And Duke wins with a leaping elbow drop, which Savage then says, I think I'm going to call that the high spinning elbow.
I wrote that down. That tickled me. I thought he was about to name Duke's finisher, like the trash compactor. I call it take the garbage out. I call it the high spinning elbow. That's what it is. You haven't called it that.
Leaping elbow. That's a silly name for a move. I had to call it the Chazwazzer.
I call it the Sizzle Monty Jig. But I like now, my new meme might be Savage just naming stuff like he's coming up with a name for the very first time. Like he sees Undertaker hitting the Tombstone Pile Driver. I'm going to call that the Pile Driver.
Like, I'm going to call that.
Hitting all these things.
I'm going to call that the Head Spike Deluxe.
I've had this idea for a film about a man that developed clones of dinosaurs. I'm going to call it Johnny and the Clonosaurus.
and just to add to the surreal nature of this show, Monsoon takes it with the comments from Ted DiBiase. He just laughs and goes, coming up next, My Undertaker.
Oh, that's it, because Gorilla goes, oh, God, we've got to hear from Moneybags, thinking, oh, DiBiase is going to do a big promo. And then, like you said, he just goes, up next, My Undertaker.
It was just a bumper before the commercial.
Just a bumper. Oh, for God's sake. It's so funny.
We come back to the first airing ever on Raw, the iconic Go Get Him Champ promo where the kid wishes Bret Hart well, not before he goes, Bret! And Bret turns to stare him down.
And then Bret walks down the corridor all angry. And you think, oh, no, he's gonna kill him. And then he gives him his glasses. It's beautiful.
And sadly, he doesn't kill him.
I think this is ripe for parody.
Oh, certainly.
But I'm upset no one's done it. I want MJF to parody this.
Throw his gum at him from down the hall.
No, I want MJF to cut it. I want the kid to go, hey, it's MJF! MJF! MJF looks around, does a slow walk down, looks the kid in the eye, and the kid goes, go get him, champ! And then MJF smiles, and then just pie-faces the kid to the floor.
It's a simple thing to do.
It'd be amazing! Or just kicks him in the head.
It writes itself, really.
It really does. It really. Oh, there was a wrestling company, and I'm gonna find the link for you. There was a wrestling company based in Worcestershire where they did their own version of this for their champion.
And oh, sounds saucy.
Oh, do you know what? They played it. They tried to. I believe they wanted to play it straight. but it's so bad. It's amazing. It's so bad.
You have my attention.
I'm going to find it. I might not be able to find it during this broadcast, but I will find it today, and you'll have it on your inbox. Oh, my God. It's so bad.
Well, if you can find it, and I'll start this our main event here, our alleged main event here.
Okay.
The Undertaker versus Mike Bell. Mike Bell working 2 weeks in a row. Good for him.
Earning them ducats.
Indeed. And as noted before, this, of course, is primetime Brian Lee playing Undertaker as best he can. I will say, just seeing him stand in the ring, what he really needed was a short job for him to go up against, because even though he looks the part, he looks like he's about 3 inches too short. Just from the old eye test.
I think that he looks a bit short, but I think all his other motions and movements, I think, are great.
Mostly.
Oh, yeah. Mostly.
Things are just a bit off, like which I'll point out during the course of this lore review here. The strikes don't look bad. And Monsoon, God, he's just going to add further credence to the fact that I think this is a bad day for him. He goes to Undertaker's managerial history because it was DiBiase who brought him into the company. He says Tigger was with Fuji at one point.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about this. I don't remember that happening.
Don't look at me. Hey, Brother Lovey got okay. Paul Bearer, right. DiBiase brought him in, sure. He was never with Mr. Fuji, but that would have ruled. My Undertaker.
Who would have been more never deadly, though? I think Mr. Fuji.
Fuji carrying the urn? Come on.
He'd have dropped it.
For a rib, he fills up a Coke. Or anthrax or something.
I have sent you the video in question.
I can't wait. Am I going to laugh hard?
Yes.
Okay. And you know this is a real Tigger because he bust out a single leg takedown.
That's the Undertaker's best move. What are you talking about?
You remember the scene in the second Naked Gun when Frank Drebin screws up and everyone does the palm to the forehead thing all at once?
Yes, and they keep cutting to different people doing it.
Yes, that was everyone backstage when that happened. Damn it, Brian.
There is a line that Savage uses during this match. It might have been just at the very beginning, where he compares, it's a topical reference, where he compares the Ted DiBiase Undertaker merger to the CBS QVC merger.
Yeah, I Googled that too to see when that was. That was July 94, so it may have been right before this air date, because I was trying to nail it down for purposes of my research.
Well, apparently it was a bit of a kiss of death, Savage saying that, because the day after this, this report came out that said the last minute move that apparently scuttles the planned merger of CBS and QVC, a minority shareholder in QVC, surprised the entertainment industry last evening with an unsolicited bid to take over. The new bidder, the Comcast Corporation, was unhappy that QVC
aligned
his cable television home shopping channel with a network broadcasting company and taking it away from his core cable business. So I think the day after Savage says this, Comcast step in and go, nah, mate, we're having QVC.
So Comcast was Shane McMahon buying WCW.
Basically, yes. He walked out onto QVC as they were presumably selling some Yankee candles. And said, I now own QVC. And just like it kicked your ass in the past, that's what I'm going to do at Shoppermania.
You remember? Yeah, I do recall when Linda McMahon kicked CBS right in the balls after rising up from the wheelchair. That was great stuff.
Oh, the pop when she rose up.
So Brian Lee hits old school at one point. I did
is
notice
it old school, or is it just school at this point?
at this point, it was, hey, that's Don Jardine's moves. There was a part where Brian Lee does the sit-up, but his hair was hanging down, so when he does a sit-up, they cut right to DiBiase's face. Because God bless post-production.
It's you know, just when you thought that Missing Edge's first spear back was a rare blunder for WWE, we go back to 94 and we miss stuff like that.
Well, no, it wasn't a blunder in this case. It was the right thing to do because you would have known it was Brian Lee at that point. Or just...
Oh, because the sit-up was that bad?
Well, because his face was uncovered, so he's doing the sit-up. So rather than zoom in on his face, they just got cut the DiBiase and just... No, it's... That's why you tape shows sometimes, so you can edit it and get it right.
Yeah, because there's nothing really that gives away, with the exception maybe the sit-up that would have done, that this is The Undertaker. And yeah, there's this really wonderful air of, not certainty, but an uncertainty about it, where like The commentator's like, well, that's The Undertaker. This is really weird. They don't get it.
Oh, yeah, because the lead does the flying clothesline, which didn't look that great. And Savage goes, nobody does it like that. Yeah, not even Mark Calloway. And you know something's amiss when he hits the tombstone. And usually Taker does the hair flip so you can see his eyes roll in the back of his head. Nope, the hair stays over the face when he crosses the arms and scores the pin.
Subtle, nice. I liked it.
It was fun.
I think that, yeah, like you say, a shorter. You should have been there with a shorter enhancement talent. But I don't have any issue with like a lot of the mannerisms and stuff he did. I thought he was pretty good.
Should have been him and Dink.
Yes, that would have been amazing.
Or the Mighty Doom, or whoever the hell was in Seabrook.
Just get them both in a big jacket.
Yeah, it's like a Muppet Man.
Like Jay Adultman.
Exactly. So, as soon as the bell rings, DiBiase comes in with a body bag, or there's a big leaf bag or something. And they're going to put Mike Bell away, which is really morbid in hindsight.
Yes.
And Paul Bearer comes out. Faker and DiBiase are a little bit off-put by his presence. Bearer tries to lure Faker his way. DiBiase tries to confront him. He pulls out a big bit of cash. Right in the middle of this, we have a Slim Jim ad.
We have to cut away for a Slim Jim ad.
We're at this moment of truth for meat snacks. and as an eater of Slim Jims, let me just say I understand.
You would quite happily break. What important moment of truth would you happily break for a Slim Jim?
Election results.
Good shout.
The ending of the Super Bowl, Edge hitting Dolph Ziggler with a spear.
The reveal of the father on Maury.
Yeah, that's, I've seen that enough. I've had my fill of white trash TV for one lifetime.
Ew.
So we come back and Faker is still torn between Ted DiBiase's money and Paul Bearer's sweet loving arms. He pulls out a big wad of bills, DiBiase does, and Faker seems undeterred at first, but pulls out even more money, and Faker's like, much better. And Paul Bearer can't believe the Undertaker would sell out.
And yeah, I think it was like Undertaker was, he wasn't convinced that this was the real, I think he was convinced that this was the real Undertaker until... He took the money instead.
Quite possibly. I didn't think of it that way.
Because he was obviously coming out to try and lure him because he wasn't too sure himself. But then when he went for the money instead, I think that was probably when he went, oh, that's not him.
What DiBiase should have done was pull out a bottle of Jack Daniels and Bear would have known, like, yep, that's him. Take your loser's Jack.
He loves Jack Daniels.
So at the end of the show, we have Jerry Lawler tracking down DiBiase in the world's narrowest hallway. Like, one guy can't even pass another person in that hallway. It's so thin. He asks DiBiase to be on the King's Court next week. DiBiase ultimately agrees. He kind of hems and hauls because he hates being out in front of the peons, his words. But he says, you know, for royalty, I will do it. So DiBiase will be the guest next week, presumably.
They weren't massively clear whether or not they were going to do a King's Court or a backstage segment.
Yeah, it's still open end at this point. We cut to a shot of the American flag, USA, USA, and that's it. Not even one last hard sell for Brett versus Kid.
Yeah, it's one. I feel like the show always ends with a push for King's Court. That obviously seems to be their big money segment at the moment.
Well, yeah, but they also plug the matches for next week and know who you're going to see. Well, I'll say right now, you will see Kid versus Brett next week. You also see Crush, Razor, and IRS all in action. But not one mention of any of them. Maybe they didn't know. But even though this was taped.
Yeah. It's because it was a live bit to the camera, wasn't it? So if it was taped, then they would have not known what was coming up next time.
Although, I mean, Monster and Savage could have dubbed in what was going to happen because those matches were taped on Friday night.
Yeah, they could have done easily, but
So this is weird.
Well, we know what's happening. It's going to be Brett versus 1-2-3 Kid. Apparently, as you have said, the best match for a while. The last stop before we go down the dirt track that is the New Generation era.
You know, I shouldn't taint you though. I will let you decide for yourself if it's as good as I say.
I'm open minded.
Spoiler: it is.
Ah, get in. So that was Raw this week.
That certainly was the episode of Raw.
I didn't mind the Undertaker bit. I thought that was fine.
The show just seemed all over the place, though.
Yeah, there was segments that should have got, like the 1-2-3 Kid bit lacked fire. Considering it's for the title. Undertaker bit I enjoyed. Weirdly, like Dutrosi going 50-50 with Mike Sharp. I never get that. They do this a lot in this era when they introduce a new guy who could just about beat an enhancement guy. Like, just about. Like, scrape a win almost.
Yeah, you think they'd be a little more dominant, but I guess some guys can, like Diesel, and other guys gotta sell a little bit.
Did you enjoy it?
No.
Cool. Well, we got through. So that's the.
I thought it was fetid garbage, but we got through it.
But we got through it once again, my friend, and we couldn't have done it without each other. This is the part, though. We started this last week.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to drop this on you now like a bombshell. Where we sum up this week's episode of Monday Night Raw. With a haiku.
Yes, I'm writing mine as we speak.
Incidentally, did you notice the music that I used for the haiku?
Would now be a good time to point out that I don't listen to these shows after we record them?
Nah, I don't either, mate.
Because I so often all voice,
which is funny because then I love when we get and I love any feedback we get at JRH Writing on Twitter, at Tom Campbell on Twitter, at Coltolic on Twitter. Whenever we get feedback from somebody, and it'll be a non-context reference to a joke that we made in passing in like episode 48. And we're like, what? I've started just going, can I have some context, please? Because I'm a bit thick.
Yeah, that's pretty much. These are one and done sometimes.
Context. I had somebody on Saturday at the wrestling last Saturday say to me, "How's your suitcase?" So it's fine. Oh no, it's fine. You mentioned on a podcast that you were buying a suitcase. Oh, yeah, I did before I went to Iceland in like October.
Oh, see, at least he cares. The important thing is he cares.
It was just like I know, and it was lovely. And we'd chat about other stuff afterwards, but I was just like, okay, it's fine. It's very suitcasey, I guess. I sound like Meltzer. It's okay, I guess. Right, haikus. Right, shut up, stop stalling.
I'm not saying we would have done the haiku. I just think, it's not a good era for haikus. They don't skew younger. Anyway, because I have my haiku ready.
Okay, let me just rattle through mine.
Okay.
To that office guy who said, "No more conflict, lads. I will break your legs."
Very good.
Thank you. And yours, sir?
Kid is too mindful. Savage is losing his mind. Talk about contrast.
Nice! Feel free to send your haikus about this week's Raw to @JRHWriting on Twitter or at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Let's do this again next week. Hope you didn't forget Valentine's Day. Love you, bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.